This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senator Adelstein?
Here.
Senator Howey?
Here.
Senator Gerstad?
Here.
Senator Maher? Senator Merchant?
Here.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
Senator Peterson?
Here.
Senator Frisley?
Here.
Senator Hansen?
Here.
Quorum.
We do have a quorum. Could we have a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting?
So moved.
Moved by Adelstein, seconded by Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Once again, I'd remind those of you who are testifying to be sure that your microphone is on, so that for the benefit of those out there in, on the Internet and anyone wishing to testify, please sign in at the door. And one last thing about cell phones, we'd appreciate it if they don't go off during this hearing. We will now open testimony to Senate Bill 80, which is an act to revise the property tax levies for the general fund of a school district. Proponents for Senate Bill 80, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Dave Knutson, State Senator from District 14 in Sioux Falls. Senate Bill 80 actually qualifies as a tradition. For a dozen years, the legislature has annually updated the we've made what's called the Cutler-Gabriel adjustment. This was a proposal that first came into being back in 1995 when Governor Janklow, during his administration, we established the current state aid funding formula and the current property tax divisions within commercial, owner-occupied, and agricultural. It was really just creating the special category of owner-occupied. At that time, the relationship for school general fund support was basically 50% state dollars and 50% local property taxes. Over the years, in Governor Janklow's remaining 7 years from 95 on, he two times made an additional 5% property tax reduction. When we did the tobacco funding in 2007, we directed, consistent with what the public had told us, 10% of that additional dollar a pack cigarette tax to property tax relief. And as a result of those actions, over time, the relationship has gone to 57% state funding and 43% local property taxpayer funding for school general fund taxes. There's always this race between how much did statewide school need increase, which is typically the per pupil amount, and how much did property tax assessments increase. For example, if you were increasing the per pupil amount by 3% and property tax assessments went up by 6%, if you did not adjust your mill levies, you'd be having 6% more revenue on the property tax side to support only 3% more of expenditures. So we've always made these adjustments each year to lower the property tax mill levies for the school general fund. And some numbers just stick in your head, and I can just remember that when we started this program back in 1995, it was $6.02 for agricultural property per thousand. Today, it's under $3. What this bill does, we don't know what the final parameters will be yet. So this bill right now just adjusts those mill levies by one penny apiece. We know those are not the real numbers. The real numbers will be calculated near the end of the session, as we know for certain what we're doing in school funding. But I think it's important that we send this bill to the floor, send it across to the House so that we have the proper vehicle to make the Cutler-Gabriel adjustment, which, again, I believe strongly that the legislature should continue to do as we've done for a dozen years and not shift more of the school general fund burden onto local property taxpayers. So that's what Senate Bill 80 is about.
Thank you, Senator. I know you have commitments. Is there anybody on the committee that would like to ask questions of Senator Adelstein?
Senator Knudsen, with your good wide experience, why would you think that property values are used as the source of funding for schools?
I would guess, again, it was probably a tradition. Probably initially, I'm guessing as you go back in history, the property taxes probably paid 100% of schools. Probably in early statehood, there was relatively little state involvement in public education. I really don't know that for certain, but certainly since I've been involved, property taxes have been the mainstay of school, local school funding, and it was really with Governor Janklow in 1995 when we had the 20% property reduction that the state's share of that local school budget became as high as 50%, and then over time, as I say, it has worked its way up as additional property tax reduction has been able to be achieved by the legislature.
I'm sorry,
yes, sir.
Chairman. Senator, I guess I didn't, my question was a different one. Why property values for whatever portion that they pay rather than a sales tax or a alcohol tax or a head tax or a poll tax, why property values would be the source?
Partially just because, I think going back in time, that's always been property taxes have tended to support local education. I suppose the thought also being that it was the local property taxpayers that produced the kids that needed the education. I don't know if I can give a better answer to why this system got created than that.
Since this is a question period, I can't suggest what my thinking is on that issue, so I won't do so now. Let me ask you another question then. In the bill that you just proposed, why would the tax on agricultural property that you're moving to be $2.60 per $1,000 of tax valuation, why that would be line 12 of the bill? Why then would owner-occupied single-family dwellings be $4.09, or rather significantly more than the amount of agricultural land, since they both represent wealth and a source of school funding?
I can give a brief history on that. And again, politics is always the art of the possible. Back in 1995, Governor Janklow ran in the 94 campaign on a property tax reduction program, and we just simply took property taxes where they were at that point in time in 1995 and made a 20% reduction in agricultural property tax rates, and a 20%, we reduced the taxes payable by owner-occupied housing. We had to create a separate category for that, but we knew what they had paid in 1994, and we simply reduced that by 20%, and the Janklow property tax reduction did not include any reduction on commercial property, so the commercial property has always been much higher rate per thousand than the other two, but we basically just continued what was in place and had reduced them by 20%. I know the historic thinking, which still makes sense to me today, was that agriculture by its nature had big areas and big land values and relatively few children, and owner-occupied houses had significant values, but also significant numbers of children, and there was a clearer match between utilization of the educational service by owner-occupied houses than there was on the agricultural side. Because of necessity, agriculture had a fairly substantial land base and value, and again, relatively few kids, something that was increasingly true as agricultural land sizes or farm sizes became became larger. So there is built into that recognition that agriculture by its nature has a lot of land value and relatively few kids compared to the owner-occupied.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, just two more questions to carry on this. If that's the case, if the number of the children is what is the function, then why don't we use some kind of a head tax rather than a disparity in mill levy on property? Why don't we say that if you have three children, your property tax will be three times what it is if you have none?
Government is the art of the possible, and again, both in 95 and since, I think we've just looked at the template we have, and it seems like it is fundamentally working, and so maybe those more dramatic ideas haven't been considered carefully.
Mr. Chairman, just two more follow-ups.
Senator, I think we're getting a little beyond the scope of this bill, and it's very interesting. It's a real good briefing on the philosophy of property tax, but we can discuss that further. I know Senator Knutson is delinquent from a meeting already. And
thank you.
Unless there's any other questions from anybody else on the committee with regard to this bill, you know, which I'll take the prerogative of the chair to say that this really is a bill that needs to pass. It is a what we call a mechanism or a skeleton or whatever that it will be finally addressed once it arrives in the House. Maybe that's a little more editorial than what the chairman should express at this time. But any further questions for Senator Knutson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents to Senate Bill 80? Further proponents? If not, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 80? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Michael Kenyon, South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation, a reluctant opponent to this bill today. As Senator Knutson has mentioned, this bill is really a tradition. I think it's maybe even moved beyond a tradition. It's almost a mythology around the Cutler-Gabriel adjustments as we talk about them around here. What I'm passing out to you, and I've got some extra copies if the crowd would like some. What I'm passing out, I'm sorry, can I get what I'm passing out has a history of the school general fund tax levy rates. If you look at, you can look and see what the tax rate was for each class of property back from 1995 when it was $14.40 for ag and $24 for non-ag. You can see if you jump from there down to 2009 where ag pays $2.61 per $1,000 of value. Owner-occupied pays $4.10, and commercial or other property pays $8.78. You can see that's a dramatic decrease in those tax rates. We've been able to do that as even as the amount of per student funding for education has increased. You can see that in the other column. Per student funding has increased from $33.50 to $46.64 per student. So we've been able to lower the taxes as the per student funding has increased because of the Cutler-Gabriel process. Unfortunately, in this year of tough economic times, the governor had to propose a bill to suspend the Cutler-Gabriel adjustments. The numbers, the benefit to the state tax rolls would be between $4.6 and $6.1 million. It's not easy to do that. It wasn't an easy choice to make for anyone. No one wants to see more taxes shifted to property owners. But I believe if you look at the difference between the pay 2008 and the pay 2009 taxes, you can see that it's not a 1 year of not doing this adjustment isn't a dramatic increase in taxes for anyone. For example, if you look at it for owner-occupied and commercial tax rate from pay 2008 to pay 2009, the tax rate decreased by 16 cents per $1,000 of assessed value or $1,000 of taxable value. So if you've got a house with a taxable value of $100,000, lowering the levy that year saved you $16. The mechanism doesn't work exactly like that, but that's about the average savings that you would receive from that adjustment. And I don't want to pay $16 more in property taxes. I assume nobody else does either. But in this time of budget problems that we have, that was the solution that was tendered. So with that, I'd be happy to stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Canyon. Are there further proponents to Senate Bill 80?
Opponents,
excuse me. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. It's good to see you again.
It's good to see things from that side of the desk, isn't it?
I'm Senator Stanford Adelstein from District 32 in Rapid City. I think that the Majority Leader's presentation was fair and well stated. If indeed the number of children is the reason why owner-occupied homes are required to pay a significantly greater percentage of the tax for the part paid by local taxation, then it would seem to me that I have a precinct in my district, and that's what I'm speaking for, along Jackson Boulevard, for those of you who come to Rapid City, between Jackson Boulevard and the beautiful Sioux Park, Jane Street, Judy Street, the streets were named for the developers' children. In that district, the vast majority are retired persons whose taxes have nearly forced them out of their homes. They have already paid in their taxes for two generations of children. As a consequence, if the tax is going to be tied to the use of the schools, then their taxes should surely be no greater than that of an agricultural property. In fact, I believe that the reason the real estate is used, in fact, I can submit studies, which I won't at this point, I will later, that show that the reason that property tax is used is that property tax represents wealth. And surely at the time that the state began, that's where all wealth was concentrated, because we didn't have either incomes or did we have other resources, bank excise tax, contractors. So that's the reason it was tied, that it, and it came back from the model, it came from the country of Scotland. It's said that for a society to progress and for industry to become important, that you had to have a well-educated citizenry, and it was the obligation for those who could afford to do so to furnish education to those who will become the next generation. And I happen to agree, I concur absolutely with that concept. As a consequence of that, there will be submitted, and there has been filed, another bill that fills in exactly the same portions that the Majority Leader, Senator Knutson, just presented to you, which equalizes the amount of maximum mill levy between owner-occupied and agricultural. This is a reasonable, a fair, a historically sound basis, because I think it grossly inappropriate for those of us today in the 21st century to accept a method simply because it existed in 1995. Mr. Chairman, I urge the committee to either reject this bill, defer it to some future period, maybe not the 41st day, but perhaps the 38th day, and as a consequence, I beg your indulgence, and I urge your support for fairness especially as you think of your own constituencies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Further opponents to Senate Bill 80? If there are no further opponents, are there any questions of the committee to any of the opponents? Seeing none, we'll close the hearing to public testimony and open to committee discussion.
Mr. Chairman, in all fairness, yes, in terms of the rules, and what would happen if this bill were referred, since the final tax levy is normally determined to the last 3 or 4 or 5 days of the session, if we took an action and moved this to the 35th day, which, of course, doesn't kill the bill?
Well, my response to that would be that, you know, like I said a little bit ago, this is a bill that really needs to pass. This is not the time to having a referendum on our tax system. And the reason that it needs to pass is because there are several other participants that need to have a part in this. One is the floor of the Senate. It can't get to the House until it's gone through the Senate. It will have a hearing in the committee of the House just like this. And finally, when it gets down to that 35th day, that's when action will take, you know, kind of in that conference time period. So, like I say, if we have some arguments with our system of taxation, that's kind of a battle to be fought on another field. And it's a very legitimate discussion that can be made. But again, I would strongly suggest that this is not the vehicle to do that with.
Mr. Chairman, I very politely disagree, because I certainly respect you as both an individual and as an outstanding chairman. If indeed there must be a bill that will go to the floor in this form, as has been given to us today, there will be a bill, I promise you, that has been introduced. It has been sponsored, that will do exactly, every line is the same as this bill, except the amounts, instead of being $3.60, well, that's interesting, $3.60 and owner-occupied being, let's see, let me see, the maximum for ag property in this bill is, I'm sorry,
is 61.
Let me see, the numbers are filled in here.
You're not looking at it.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to the wrong bill. I'm going to the bill that will be introduced later. Rather than the number being $8.70, let's go down to the owner occupied. The maximum levy on agricultural property in the bill that we are not considering will be $2.60 per thousand. The bill that will be submitted will be in exactly this form, with every line and paragraph exactly the same, except in the bill that will be submitted will be owner occupied and ag will have be $3.60 each. They'll be equal. They will come to the same total that this bill does, times the number of students at the amount offered. So in order to get something to the floor that will accomplish the objective you suggested, I once again urge that this bill be rejected and await a fairer bill, which is identical in form and only changed in a few items of context. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I strongly agree with our chairman that this bill needs to go down to the floor. If you look at the property tax situation in the state of South Dakota, there's only one property tax that this mill levy affects, and that's the general school funding. The capital outlay, the special education, the teacher retirement, the county budgets, the township budgets, all property there pays the same taxes. And the reason that Senator Knutson explained, the reason that there's a difference on this is the vast areas of property and the services that are required by a home compared to this ag land. Not only the services for school, but the services for fire protection, the services for sewer, for electric, everything that exists with the homes. There's many more expenses that are involved with a home than there is with the vast quantities of ag land that exists in South Dakota. And I believe that we came up with a fair tax system some 15 years ago, and I hope that we keep going with that tax system. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Howley.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move due pass.
Okay. I will recognize that motion, seconded by Senator Gerstad. Any speaking to the motion?
Well, yeah, I think some of our discussion is certainly a valid discussion. I just, because of the nature of some of the discussion, I want to point out for the record that over the past decade or more, that actually ag levies have gone down at a slower rate than owner-occupied houses. So there's already been the suggestion perhaps that maybe ag isn't paying a fair share is maybe for another day, but I don't want to let this meeting go by without saying ag continues to pay its fair share and then some.
Mr. Chairman, a point of order.
Senator?
I think you had not terminated the period for discussion, and I certainly would, given the magnitude, $144 million that's involved in this, I would hope that we could discuss this further, because I would like to respond to both Senator Peterson and Senator Howey on their statements.
And you may. We're in the discussion. We're making comments to the motion. We just have a motion on the floor now. So
thank you very much. Senator Peterson, I certainly agree with you when it comes to the other services. However, the bill that we are discussing today, as you will see on line 1 and 2, have nothing to do with roads, streets, and other services. The bill that we are considering today says an act to revise the property tax levies for the general fund of a school district. Has nothing to do with counties, has nothing to do with roads, has nothing to do with streets, it has only to do with school districts. With all due respect, Senator Howley, when you look at the numbers that have decreased, they have decreased in exactly the same proportion for homeowners as for owner-occupied and others, because the same bill has always had, if you look on the online, on line 14 and 15 of Senate Bill 80, and this language has been true since it was adopted in 1997, in the last century. Every bill has said this. If the district's levies are less than the maximum levies as stated in this section, the levies shall maintain the same proportion to each other as represented in the mathematical relationship at the minimum level. In other words, ag properties and owner-occupied have gone down at exactly the same proportion, replaced with appreciation to Senator Nelson's district, replaced by gambling revenue. So they've gone down, but agriculture has not gone down 0.001% less than owner-occupied has gone down.
Senator Howey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just, for the record, say that either the department is in error with the numbers that they've given us, which I suggest is highly unlikely, or my math is incorrect, and that might be more likely, but I do not think it's incorrect. If you follow from 1998 down to 2009, you'll see that owner-occupied actually had a higher decline in school levies when you compare it to ag. So, in fact, ag gradually paid proportionately more.
Mr. Chairman, and then I'll finish.
Yes, Senator.
It's a matter of mathematics. Between 1997, was that the date you used, or 1998? If you go 1998, ag did reduce from 566 to 261. At that time, as you can see, ag paid 557 divided by 920. In 2009, 261 divided by 410. You'll find the same percentage, because the law was violated. The law clearly stated that the proportions would have to stay the same.
If I may, Senators, I think this is a case where you're both right. The proportion this is a proportionate relationship, and the number is about 1 to 1.6 to 3.44. I think that that's, you know, I might be off a digit or two, but, you know, I don't carry those numbers around in my head all the time. And so as you reduce each of these things, they come off at the same percentage rate. But, you know, the taxpayer, he doesn't get too excited about percentage rate. He just wonders, how many dollars am I paying in tax? And so, you know, when Senator Howell, you say that the reduction has been more noticeable, think in terms of the commercial. You know, for every dollar that is removed from the levy on ag, commercial is coming down three times as much. And that's, you know, if you want to have something like this function, it has to stay in that mathematical relationship. And that's the reason why this bill is before us. It's to maintain that ratio as this moves forward. And then when we get to the end and we know how much money we're going to have. And once again, the chair would take the privilege of saying that, you know, when it comes to funding schools, we tend to look at my own district. But the way state government looks at this is that as if it was just one great big school district, the whole state was one school district. And the relationship that has been tried to be maintained is that state government has tried to pick up a portion of what had been previously the burden of the local property taxpayers. And that's the reason that we've been able to move from 50-50 to now about state government picking up 57 and local government picking up 43. And you can have all kinds of arguments, you know, when you think in terms of what does this mean to my own district. But, you know, we in state government have to be as fair as we possibly can to all of the people in South Dakota. So are there any further comments? If not, I believe we're ready for committee action. We have committee action. We have a bill. We have a motion. It was moved by Senator Howley and seconded by Senator Gerstead. They do pass.
Mr. Chairman, may I speak to the motion? I have not done so. I did in the debate section.
Well, I've been considering it. You were speaking to the motion, but if you have something further to say, I will recognize that. We're not that pressed for time.
All right. I'll simply say one more time. I urge fellow members of the committee to reject this motion. You'll have another opportunity to vote on a bill with a different set of numbers, all the language the same, and can accomplish the same purpose as this bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All in favor of the motion will vote yes. Those opposed, no. And the secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein.
No.
Howie.
Yes.
Gerstead.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Merchant.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
7-2.
Okay, the motion of the Senate Bill 80 will move forward on a 7-2 vote. And Let's see. I know Senator Frisley has some introductions that he would like to make, but I also have one that I would like to make. My daughter from Chicago is here visiting, and she has two little boys with her that apparently have their attention span has reached its maximum, so they're probably running the halls. And my daughter Heidi is heading back there. Welcome. Senator Frisley.
We have some friends and county officials that are with us from Clark County today, and I'd like the committee to recognize those people. If you would stand up, please.
Okay, we will move ahead to, I didn't mention at the beginning, but Senate Bill 94 we're going to defer until next Wednesday. There was just at the request of the sponsor and, well, at the request of several. So we will now open the public hearing on Senate Bill 86, which is an act to repeal certain provisions concerning the application of an inventory tax on certain fuels and storage on January 1st, 1996. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a pleasure to be in this room. I look at this and say what we had before and what we have today and say this is remarkable. I am Senator Jim Hunstad. I'm from District 2, and I bring this bill, a repealer, to you. And I would like at the beginning of this to say, to explain a little bit about why this was originally in place and to try to explain it to you. In 1995, the tax on gasoline was 18 cents a gallon, and at that time it was moved to 22 cents. And so the tax rate actually increased on January 1st. It became effective, so it had to have been, I don't actually understand why it wouldn't have been July. But our taxes in gasoline are a little different than they are in other products. Ordinarily in my retail store, I purchase an item. We sell dolls. I purchase a doll. I put it on the counter. No taxes are paid by me. And eventually, if I'm lucky, I sell the doll. Depending on the price I sell the doll, I collect the tax and I send it to Pier. With gasoline, it works a little different. The person who's in charge of selling the gas actually pays the tax at when he gets the gas. He pays the tax in front. It comes out of his bottom line. And eventually, when he sells the gas to a consumer, he collects that same tax back and reimburses himself with that money. 1995, the tax rate was 18. The retailer paid 18 cents a gallon. November went through. December went through. And on January 1st, the gas now is worth 22 cents a gallon, or the tax is worth 22 cents a gallon. And he began collecting the 22 on gas that he'd only paid 18 cents on. So in 1995, this was put into place that said on January 1st, the man who had the retail store was supposed to measure the remaining gas in his tank and pay those 4 cents that he owed, because immediately on January 1st, he was going to start collecting those 4 cents, and that additional 4 cents should not have been a windfall for the person who was running the gasoline store. So it was a very important law, needed to be there because of the way we collect taxes on gasoline. Last summer, as all of us were concerned with $4 gas and how are we going to fix our roads, I, like many of you, started reading through the law books, and I discovered this piece of legislation, which took effect on January 1st, 1996, and told those people to measure their tanks and send in the money. I don't know if they did. I assume if they didn't, they were caught by somebody, and they're probably still in jail. I expect they did. On January 2nd, this was no longer, didn't make any difference, because January 2nd, they'd already done it on January 1st, or they were in trouble. So I said, wow, this is something that's been dangling there all this time doing nothing. So I decided that this was a good time to repeal it. You understand now how it works, but in discussions with revenue, we've come to some different agreement. We think we still may need this at some future time if we increase the tax again. The same problem will exist. So I am going to, I know it's going to be introduced, a friendly amendment here who does a better set of wording this that accomplishes the same thing at any time in the future that that problem exists. In other words, we raise the tax, the person who receives the gas pays a certain rate, and then on the day he begins to collect the new rate, he'll have to remit the rest or remit the difference on whatever that rate is. I am satisfied that the wording that is that has been drafted will accomplish that. And so at this point, I guess we'll be repealing the words January 1st, 1996 and doing some crafting on the language. So I think it's friendly, and I am willing to support that. And if I hear in the discussion, I would like to reserve time at the end to readdress this committee.
Okay, well, I would welcome that that amendment to be circulated, and if you would like to...
have it, sir.
Okay, and we won't move the amendment until we're in committee discussion, but...
Correct. I just wanted you to know ahead of time that I consider it friendly, but I would reserve some time in case, heaven forbid, that we find some way to disagree.
We'll Thank extend you. That courtesy to you. Further proponents to Senate Bill 86.
I would be glad to answer questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Deborah Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. We bring to you an amendment that is being passed out, and if you would like, I'll give you a few minutes till you get the amendment, and if I could speak to the amendment.
You certainly may.
I will talk a little bit about the process. Senator Hunstead was, and I thank him very much for bringing this to our attention, but he came to my office this summer and said that he was going to do this. And at the time, I didn't think that it was a bad idea to repeal it because it was old language. However, after further discussions and the volatility of what we're dealing with on a continual basis here and what may or may not happen during this legislative session with a tax increase, we felt that it was equally important that we had language on the books that would allow us to collect an inventory tax should this legislative body decide that they wanted to increase the tax on our fuels. And so what you really will see before you here is just generic language that really will allow us to implement an inventory tax if they're immediately prior to the tax increase. So if you decided that you were going to increase the tax and it was going to be effective July 1st of 2009, then on June 30th, they would have to take an inventory reading and remit the additional tax on that fuel in their inventory at that time. That's basically what the bill does. We did make it generic, so it wasn't just specifically to special fuel or jet fuel. It's subject to all of our fuel taxes under 1047B. And I'd be happy to answer any questions when the time is appropriate.
Okay. Thank you very much. Further proponents to Senate Bill 86.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, member of the committees. Donna Leitsky, Executive Director and Lobbyist for the South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association. And I'm actually here to talk about the amendment and to support the amendment to the bill. As Deborah Hilmer did state, in the event that a tax increase would come at any point in the future, my marketers, who are the gas station owners and the wholesalers and the people who hold bulk fuel, have to have a way to remit that tax to the Department of Revenue. Remitting that is important for us because if we get audited and we don't, we get assessed a penalty. So we do support the bill in the amended form and urge you to pass it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Further proponents to Senate Bill 86. Further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 86? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. And first of all, would someone like to move the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment.
Second.
Motion by Senator Adelstein, seconded by Senator Peterson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the bill is now as it's amended. Further questions speaking to the...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Maher.
I have a question for Deb. Who pays this tax? Is it when it's picked up at the pipeline, is it at the gas station, or is it me, the farmer out on the farm who has a 500-gallon gas tank? How is this? Run through the flow chart one more time for us.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Maher, thanks for that question because it is important. In this particular instance, it's who has the inventory. And currently right now, just to give you a little flow of how we collect the tax is collected at the rack the majority of the time or upon import into the state. And so you would collect the new tax after that particular date that the tax was increased. But the fuel that was in inventory at our marketers or probably retail stations.
Gas stations,
okay, would then be required to remit. It's a simple form, just does the calculation for the number of gallons that they have in their inventory of the fuel type, and then the applicable tax is applied to that. We do not go after farmers or agricultural users or anything of that nature. It's only our licensed marketers that have the storage facilities that we would require the payment of that tax. Because they then are reselling it after that point and would be collecting that additional tax at that time. I hope that answers your question.
Further questions? I guess I would have one, and I don't know if it's for you or Ms. Litsky, but from an accounting standpoint, I'm the retailer. They don't account the payment of tax as an expense and then show the receipt at the end as income. If you were an accountant, chart on your chart of accounts, what would those accounts be called?
I'm going to yield to Donna.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not an accountant either. I'm an engineer, but.
Oh, you're closer than I am.
Basically, how I think they would do it is they would take it as an expense because gas tax is an expense to them. And once they sell it, then it becomes income to them.
Okay,
but it's a differential.
It's booked a little differently than in the case of sales tax.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So because it's handled differently, because as the senator said, we pay at the rack. And then we collect the tax back when we actually sell the fuel to a consumer. So we have that tax liability until the time we sell it to the end user.
Thanks. Just like freight and everything else. Okay. Any other questions? If not, we're open to committee action.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we vote. Are you voting first on the amendment?
The amendment.
I move that we add the amendment to the bill.
Yes. Is there moved by Senator Adelstein? Who was the second?
Peterson.
Senator Peterson. Any speaking to the amended motion further?
The amendment has not been accepted.
Yeah, we accepted the amendment.
Then I move that the bill as amended receive a due pass.
And that was Senator Peterson's second. Everybody straight on what we're doing? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. And the secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Howie?
Aye.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Grizzly?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Okay. Motion carries. Any further business to come before us today?
I don't know.
Oh, we need a title amendment. Someone like to move? Senator Peterson? Second? Second by Senator Gerstad. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now we are ready for a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Merchant. Second by Senator Peterson. All in favor, say aye. Opposed? We're adjourned.